Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 373. This is the Caffeine Dreams edition here, because I fell asleep recording it last night. We're getting ready to record it. Hopefully everybody out there is having a great week. I'm currently at the end of my week. It's probably the middle of yours. What we did this week was, since PodCamp was last weekend, I decided to take off the last 2 days of this week to kind of get everything done around the house. And as you can imagine, I'm probably not getting very much done right now, except for the fact that the dog already went to the groomers and everything. The house is still in shambles, but I have to wait until my neighbors wake up or until it's a sufficiently late enough time in the morning before I can start sanding on the walls and irritating them all over again. So hopefully, like I said, that you are currently in the midst of what happens to be a fabulous week for you. This is really good right now. I like having the time off. I really kind of wish I could have kept my son home today, but you know, when you're going to be painting with all kinds of noxious fumes and things like that, it's just not a good thing to have little kids around. It's not a good thing to be around yourself, so... yeah, great stuff's going on. Other than the house being in shambles, we got a nice big thick pot of chili, the first of the fall, cooking upstairs. Not the quick veggie chili that I had talked about before, but my famous three bean chili that I still need to write the recipe up for. So it's not entirely done yet, so I'm going to be smelling it the rest of the day. So hopefully I'm going to be using some of those noxious fumes to quell the hunger pangs that are going to start rising up in probably another hour or so as the chili gets really good and aromatic. So, like I said, this is the Caffeine Dreams edition. I had all this, all the different pieces of the puzzle were there yesterday. The only problem being that I was too tired because I haven't gotten a full night's sleep in over a week. Every time I get to bed, no matter how early or how late it is, either the cats, the dog, or the boy has been waking us up. So it's been kind of rough around here at the caffeination lair. So hopefully this is gonna start a new day here. Yeah, we have a lot of great stuff to talk to you about here today. We're going to be talking to you just a little bit about barcodes, the FTC, lawyers, Master Chief, steampunk, sewage-powered cars, crowdsourced-powered coffee, and a whole bunch of other things that are going to kind of drift their way in and out of the episode. I did want to make mention, before we got started too far into the episode, that the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Find all the other member shows, including us, over at techpodcast.com. Everybody has agreed to create child safe, family friendly, and educational content, so hopefully you can head on over there and check that out. The Caffeination is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. Face-to-face business meetings with clients and colleagues always are going to be important. You're going to always need to press the flesh. You always need to step outside the box and meet somebody on their terms. But the problem is determining when that is necessary. You don't need to do it every single time. Business travel is always going to be a hassle, and it's sometimes, to be honest with you, it's just a complete waste of money. I have a solution for you there. You can do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. With just a click, you can host sales presentations, training sessions, or do product demos right from the comfort of your very own home. You can do it from anywhere, be it your home, your office, your hotel room. You can condense meetings down and make yourself a lot more efficient. GoToMeeting is just $49 a month for unlimited online meetings. You can host 5 or 500, and it's all the same price. Plus, you get voiceover IP and phone conferencing included. Our listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a full unlimited online meeting solution free. For this offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts for your free trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of crazy and cool stuff. I did also want to make mention that Jeffrey Powers is running yet another fantastic contest over at podcastmadness.com. If you are reading the show notes, then you can find out that you can head on over there and enter into the code BLOGSIMPLE, and you will get one entry. That's the code that we have typed up in there. What we have here is a 1-year subscription to Mozy, a computer backup solution. It's a really cool piece of software, and they have an awesome little graphic there, so you can head on over there and check that out. But the fun part about this is that you, the listeners of the Caffeination Podcast, as opposed to people who just get the show notes and read, which I'm still very thankful for those of you who do, you have an extra chance. All you have to do is enter the code DATA as well, and you get two chances, one for Blog Simple and one for Data. So two codes for the price of one for just listening and giving me your time. So thank you so much, and thank you to Jeffrey Powers for running that. His own podcast is the Geekazine Podcast. You can head on over there. All of the shows currently promoting this are All Things Geek, Ben's Tech Show, Bitnapping TV, the Caffeination Podcast, wonder where that one is, CMS Weekly, Day in Tech History, Geekazine Podcast, Jesus Geek, Moth Pod, My Untitled Folder, SDR News, Sonic Beyond, TCT Podcast, and The Force Field. It's a great, great list of shows, so you can head on over there, and you can get everybody has an extra simple little code. So everybody has two codes, one on the show notes and one in the actual content of the podcast themselves. So that's a whole ton of different ways that you can enter. So just wanted to kind of pass that along to you. Also, another fun thing that we have going here, I've been talking about it a while, switching over to Chrome for actually doing the show, and I got to tell you, I'm never going back. The average memory footprint, if you do Control-Alt-Delete on a PC, it also happens on a Mac, but if you do Control-Alt-Delete on a PC and you go to Task Manager and you see how much memory every program's using, when I was using Firefox, if I had designed an episode, if I had all the tabs open, which is how I talk about everything, and I was ready to go, anywhere from 385 megs to 450 megs of RAM was currently being taken up by Firefox. That is not only unfortunate, that's not a recipe for success. You know, audio programs take up a lot of memory, so the more RAM you have available, the better off it is. Google Chrome, we're averaging between 70 megs and 90 megs. And that's even with a couple different little video clips and stuff there, like actually sitting on the pages. I don't know if you knew this, but if you have a YouTube something or over open and you try and open up another tab, the YouTube thing actually uses more memory than most of the other tabs that you have open. Depends on how much flash is on the sites. I mean, I use ad blocker to just kind of cull down the ads, at least for when I'm actually going through and talking about them, because I need to have quick, efficient communication. It doesn't always work. So Chrome for the win here. All right, we have a Geek Cruft section and a Food and Caffeinated Bits. We're going to be going back to the three-section thing in just a little bit, but this time, you know, we didn't have the chance to refine everything, so I'm going to be running right on through this, and hopefully you can keep up. All right, the first little thing we have up here, the new FTC guidelines for endorsement by bloggers. This is by Whitney Hoffman over at WhitneyHoffman.com. Whitney's one of the other organizers of PodCamp Philly, and as well as she helped organize PodCamp New York. She works for the PodCamp Foundation. She is a fantastic person. If you've never read her stuff, you need to head on over there and do that. She's also the host of the LD podcast, the Learning Disabilities podcast. So she is a fantastic person to know in this space. I'm happy to call her one of my friends. She is also a lawyer, but don't hold that against her, because she is fantastic at sharing her lawyerly knowledge for those of us who are not quite so legally inclined. The Federal Trade Commission just put out a new set of guidelines, basically the updated guidelines that had been out since 1980 and hadn't been changed since then. And I know how long that is. I was born in 1980. I know it makes some of you feel old, others feel young, who knows, but either way, the FTC has been looking at this and saying, all right, how can we actually fine-tune the guidelines? And what they basically said is that there's new guidelines on how you can support products and disclosure. So the rules themselves aren't changing, but basically, if for bloggers specifically, if somebody does a pay-for-post where somebody pays them to talk about an object or a service or anything, they now have to disclose that in the article itself. It now has to be in there. It was not ever codified. Some people actually disclose it on a separate page. Hey, these are all the sponsors. I've always tried to disclose when I get free products. Oh, yeah, this also extends to free products. So somebody sends you a product and say, hey, what do you think of this? And you write a post, good, bad, or indifferent on it. You have to talk about it in the actual in the podcast and in anything else. I've always tried to be upfront about that, and I think all of my reviews actually comply with this already. I have to go back and check. There's not that many of them, so I can probably do it. But basically, it has to now be married to that data forever. The other thing that you have to take into account is that any time you get a free anything, it has to be associated with this. You have to disclose that. So whether you're paid to do the post, whether you're paid for a favorable review, whether you're paid for absolutely anything, you have to do that. I highly suggest, this is not something I can condense into a 30-minute podcast with other topics being in here. What I highly suggest you do is you head on over to Whitney's blog and actually read these. If you are a podcaster, if you are a blogger, if you are anybody whoever talks about anything. This can even be down to a tweet. This can be down to a Facebook status where I got this and it's fantastic. If you were sent that for free and you didn't disclose that, you could be on the back end of a very hefty fine. Yesterday, when all of this stuff started coming out, it was $11,000. Now, people are kind of backpedaling and saying, no, it's not going to be $11,000 for certain things. But Whitney has all the scoop on this, and I highly suggest you head on over there and check this out. So everybody can be a witness. You just got to watch out what you say and who gave you what to say it. So, all right, next little thing that we have up for you here. Google scans some barcode loving. Yes, that's true. Google's logo yesterday celebrated the 57th anniversary of the first barcode patent. Except back in 1952, the first patent for the barcode was not in the standard lines that you see now, but was actually in concentric rings of circles. So it's pretty kind of cool. Somebody actually said that the barcode itself is the hexadecimal equivalent of the word Google, or not hexadecimal, like the ASCII number equivalent. So I guess the G would be something like, you know, 68 or something like that. I don't know. But if you scanned it, if you have a barcode scanner, the only thing is somebody actually scanned the Google logo with their Google phone, because they all have this fantastic little thing where you can scan a barcode, it'll read the barcode, tell you what the item is, and then search for a lower price on it. It didn't work with their own logo. I would hope that they would have kind of thought somebody would do that. I just thought it was pretty fantastic that it didn't match up. All right, next little thing, something that's near and dear to my heart. Can a radio station give away tickets to a football game? My favorite team in the league, the Philadelphia Eagles, say no. This is horrible. Why would you ever do that? Here's the thing. They're saying that other radio stations are using the Eagles for the purpose of promotions. Of course they are. They're buying the tickets. Now, this all basically centers on the right of first sale. Whether or not after you buy something, do you have the right to do what you want with it? The Eagles are saying that they have other radio stations in the Philadelphia area. It's 94.1 WYSP. Has the privilege of broadcasting the rights to the game. So since they are partnered officially with the Eagles, any promotion that they want to do and use the Eagles' name, they can, because they're already officially partnered with them. Whereas another radio station like 93.3 WMMR, one of my favorite stations, is not allowed to do that, according to the Eagles. So this is going to court right now, and it's going to be interesting to see where this actually comes off. You've already seen this kind of thing where somebody actually uses the word Super Bowl to promote a product. Hey, we're having a Super Bowl sale. No, you're not. The NFL doesn't want you to. So the NFL is now officially the no fun league, so we're going to move right on. I'm actually more than a little bit upset at this. I think this is kind of ridiculous, and I'm glad that in the economy that we have, you know, people giving away stuff for free, my favorite team had to go out and poop on the party, for lack of a better term. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. Master Chief says you can kiss the bride. That's correct. Somebody actually had a wedding that was officiated by Master Chief, the character from Halo, as the Master of Ceremonies, Master Chief of Ceremonies, I guess. And the string band that they actually hired played the theme song. Now, I'm not opposed to that part. I think that it's pretty cool that they had the theme song from Halo, because it actually is a really nice orchestrated piece. And most people actually wouldn't know, but having a guy up there in full Mjolnir armor, I think it's Mjolnir 7, I'm not sure, but having him up there in like full Spartan regalia is more than a little weird. And for those of you who don't know, we're not talking about Spartans like the movie 300, we're talking about like full-on RoboCop-style battle armor. It looks more than a little weird. Imagine green stormtrooper with a shiny shield for a face. So there you go. All right, moving right along. Next little thing we have up for you here is a steampunk keyboard mod. This shows you how to take... This is not only a steampunk keyboard mod. This actually shows you step-by-step how you, too, can take your old clacker and turn it into a lovable piece of steampunk goodness. They have videos, they have everything, they even have technical drawings on what exactly they did. And by the time they're done, they have some beautiful, beautiful work. It actually... It's a workable keyboard. This is fantastic. I'm really, really, really tempted to actually try this out. So by the time you get to the final version, it looks like an old typewriter with all the little circle keys and everything. They actually used buttons. I didn't even think about some of the ways that they're actually doing, and they basically glued them on a raised portion of where the old keyboard would have been, so that you can actually still use it and tap it, and it still has that nice little clacky sound, especially if you have one of the old chunky keyboards. I don't really know if this would work well with one of those like I don't even, one of those like rolly silicon USB keyboards. But this is from over at the steampunkworkshop.com, a fantastic website for all things steampunk. All right, moving right along. The next little thing we have up for you here is Farm Hacking 7 Amazing Corn Mazes. Get it? Maize, corn. Yeah, bad jokes. That's all we do. All right, this is an article from over at Hackaday.com. Basically shows you how farmers can create some beautiful designs from the sky. It's all about GPS tracking and laying out vector fields across fields. So it's kind of fun and kind of cool to actually sit there and play along with them. It's also kind of fun to see some of the other ones. Football is apparently a really popular trend. There's also, I was unaware of this, but there's actually two ways to do this. The first way is to actually plant your field and then go through and mess up the soil where the stuff is. The other thing is actually allows you to plant the field and then wait for it to grow about knee high and then go through and destroy it. And it actually gives you cleaner lines, apparently, of doing one or the other. I'm not really sure. But they have Yankees Red Sox. They have Go Chiefs. They have Let Freedom Ring. Unfortunately, the Let Freedom Ring one was not from the anywhere near Philadelphia. So it's kind of like, man, come on. The Liberty Bell should be our thing. All right, moving right along here. Next little thing we have up for you here. Men arrested at G20 for Twittering. Here's what went down and why free speech always isn't. Except there's going to be some issues with the last part. What went down is a bunch of people who, I'm not sure if they self-identify themselves as anarchists or if the government's labeling them as anarchists. But either way, a bunch of people who don't really like what's going down at the G20 and don't really appreciate what it represents and everything have decided to protest, which is no uncommon occurrence, especially at the G summit, or the G10 summit, or G20, whatever. I know it's G20 this time. I'm not sure if it's always G20. I thought it was G7, G10, whoever it is. Integer, whatever summit that is. Global Economic Summit, actually held in Pittsburgh this year. The way that it worked out was the people were using Twitter and SMS to actually listen or to actually update the different groups of protesters on where the cops were going. So they were listening to police scanners, they were doing that, and they were dispersing the information to allow them to more effectively protest. You are allowed to protest. You are allowed to peacefully protest. That's fine. There's no problem with that. You are allowed to listen to police scanners because somebody needs to watch the watchers. That's the idea behind it. You are allowed to listen to police watchers and share what you heard because, again, you are allowed to actually, it's kind of like an oversight on the cops. It's not kind of like, it is oversight on the cops. But what you're not allowed to do is use communication means and use speech to aid and abet a crime. So that's what the pretense that they're being arrested on. However, there was no crime. It's not a crime to peacefully gather. So if they are aiding and abetting a group of protesters who are peacefully gathering, then there is no crime. The only problem is it's going to be hard to prove one way or another, so it's going to be interesting to see what actually happens. But the guy that they actually ended up arresting has two master's degrees, so he's no slouch in the intellect department. So who knows where this is all going to turn around, but I just wanted to kind of push forward. Just saying free speech doesn't mean it isn't. Free speech, first of all, had to be earned at some point in time, so you might want to keep that in the back of your head. And the second thing is that not all speech is free. Free speech only exists in which you do not infringe upon somebody else's rights. So you cannot yell fire in a crowded movie theater because that is of itself is a crime. It's dangerous speech. You cannot use speech to aid and abet a crime like what they're saying. Like, let's just say these people were being hoodlums and they were destroying property and things like that. If they were listening to the police scanner and then using Twitter and whatnot to share the information to allow them to more effectively damage things, then yes, that is a crime. However, since the protests involved were supposedly peaceful, except for one instance where there was property damage and the timeline doesn't actually match up, where the property damage would have occurred before this gentleman was arrested. So they're going to have a hard time proving this one way or another. It's going to be interesting to see. All right, now for something completely different. Amrod Experimental Keybird. This is something you're going to smack yourself across the forehead when you think about a key ring, a key plus ring. Imagine the wide part of the key up at the top turned into a key ring. There you now have the Keybird. This is only $7. It's disgustingly simple. The only problem is you couldn't necessarily have a ring full of these, or else it would look kind of ridiculous. The other situation is kind of a little bit more compact. But if you have one primary key that you need to use for a lot of things, like I know that I would love to have my office key be this and then have other ones hook onto it, I think this would be fantastic. And this would also kind of solve a lot of the problems where you have people who try and, you know, every once in a while you get that one key ring where you really can't pry it apart, and you're trying to drop your car off at the shop, and then you have to sit there and, you know, spin it for 30 minutes trying to get the thing out. So this would hopefully simplify that. And for $7, gotta love it. All right, next up we have here, microbe converts sewage into ethanol. Yet another way that we might be able to eventually defecate in our gas tank, as Adam Curry from the Daily Source Code wants to do with his biofuels. But the idea behind this is that in order to take some of the biomass out of the sewage treatment process, you can actually introduce these microbes, which the byproduct of them consuming different pieces of cellulose from biomass is actually ethanol. This actually goes hand in hand with a robot that we talked about a little while ago called the Eater robot, which was able to harvest biomass in any form and use the cellulose in it to actually create ethanol for food, or not for food, for gas for this thing, so that it could actually run around. So the thing was pretty much independent of a fuel supply. Now this is taking that and removing the flesh harvesting robot and allowing these microbes to actually live in a separate container tank in the sewage treatment plant to allow ethanol to be created from. I think that's great. They're saying that somehow you might be able to reduce by as much as 30-40% the amount of biomass that actually has to go through the process of sewage treatment. This is good things. Like any time you can take things out of the waste stream where they have to be treated and sanitized and everything, you're really going to hopefully create a little bit more of an energy efficient economy. So I thought that was pretty cool. Wanted to share it with the group. All right, moving right along. The next little thing that we have up for you here is nonsense sharpens the intellect. I think this is actually the last thing in the Geekcraft section. Nonsense actually sharpens the internet. Nonsense is the internet. Nonsense sharpens the intellect. It's an article from over at the New York Times, so get it while the getting is good. I'm probably going to save a copy of the article on my computer because the Times puts things behind their lovely veiled curtain after a little while. But they say every once in a while, if you have experienced something so completely out of the normal, so something that really kind of throws your brain for a loop, you apparently learn better because of this. These little jolts in your mind, these little things that you weren't expecting, these little twists and turns in the roads of life actually allow for you to more accurately process data. The way that they were tested this is a psychology professor at the University of Toronto actually had a string of letters that he had his students attempt to memorize beforehand, then gave them a test on it. And he said, okay, they passed or failed, whatever. And then what he did was he had 20 college students read The Country Doctor by Franz Kafka, which is an incredibly absurd story, which the New York Times kind of abridges like this. The title is the doctor of the title makes a house call on a boy with a terrible toothache. He makes the journey and finds out that the boy has no teeth at all. The horses who plied the carriage begin to act up. The boy's family becomes annoyed, and then the doctor discovers the boy has teeth after all, and so on. So it's very crazy. It's very Kafka. It's very insane. And then they were given the same string of letters after the fact, or I'm not even sure if it was the same string because there might be problems with the scientific method if it was, but a different string of random letters, 6-9, XMXRTV, and stuff like that, and then asked to remember them and take a test off them. Now, these were 45 strings of 6-9 letters of just like crazy orientations of letters that make no sense. They said after they read the crazy story, they were able to recall 30% more of the letter strings than before they did. So by throwing the mind for a loop and by changing the ways in which you process data, it actually, I'm not sure if it's a short time effect or if over your lifetime, if you start having some really weird dreams or whatnot, or experiences that are beyond what should actually happen, then so this is interesting. This bears a little bit of more of investigation than we can do in this short little show, but I wanted to pass it along. And, so I was going to put something incredibly crazy here, but I think the rest of the show kind of speaks to that in and of itself. If you can follow along with any kind of logic, a standard edition of the Caffeination podcast hosted over at www.caffination.com, then you are living in the absurd. That's all I can probably say to that. So hopefully you enjoyed the Geekcraft section. We're going to move along to the food and caffeinated bits here. I already told you where you can find this episode. If you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, You can at me at Twitter at @caffeination. You can send me an email at caffeination@gmail.com. Or you can stay in touch via the phone at 215-240-1319. All right, moving right along. We have what's inside a cup of coffee. Now, I know what's inside a cup of coffee. There's water and there's coffee. That's what I thought was pretty much it. But apparently the fine folks over at Wired have decided that they were going to dissect all the different chemicals that are actually in coffee, and here is what you get. The first thing they list is caffeine. The second thing they list is water. Okay, there's no surprises there. The second thing they list is ethyl phenol. Okay, weird. Some of the things that they actually put here are pretty funny. For instance, they say the caffeine's in there. Everybody knows what caffeine is, but not very many people actually know that caffeine is actually an alkaloid plant toxin, similar to nicotine and cocaine, and that it's also a bug killer that stimulates by blocking neuroreceptors that sleep the sleep chemical andazine. So the result is that you're awake. They also have quinic acid, dicafefluquinic acid, dimethyl disulfide, acetamethylcarbinol. I'm not even sure what all these things are, but and niacin, the everybody's favorite vitamin. So it's vitamin B3. It's kind of fun to sit here and go through it. It actually talks a little bit about where the different flavor notes come from. For instance, if your coffee has a nice, lovely, buttery taste to it, not necessarily buttery, but if it's really rich, and if you have a really nice, good, smooth cup, then it probably has more acetamethylcarbinol than other cups of coffee. So I'm not even sure, but they also apparently have putrescine, which is what makes spoiled meat so poisonous. I don't know why all this is in a cup of coffee. I'm not entirely sure that I care, but I do know that I now know exactly what is in a cup of coffee. A bunch of lovin'. That's all we're going to say. All right, moving right along. Coffee spam is absolutely hilarious. I actually made a mistake in the first draft of this, and I actually linked to the Goofy Spam blog. If you're looking for it, you can search for coffeeshopcoffeemaker.edublogs.org. It's a ridiculous post. The only problem with this kind of spam is that it looks almost exactly like a real article. And so it says, like, the espresso maker was invented in 1901, and since then there have been multifarious versions to look on the call. The different variations of the espresso mixer are discussed demean then. Coffee mechanisms of an espresso coffee maker embody the portafilter, which a metal basket curves the coffee grounds as steam baton, which can be occupied to fizz and steam efficiently appropriate for drinks when needed. So this kind of craziness actually all winds down, and it's all a way of creating link backs to various to various sources. It's all kind of a dirty trick in the SEO world, but looking at this, and it's just insane to actually read it, and it's like every once in a while, like, okay, that sentence almost makes sense, and then they throw like a word like turnip in there. Not necessarily that they do, but it's like somebody took an article on coffee, translated it through four different languages, and then this is what you get. So I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty funny, and some of the stuff that's been coming out recently is kind of hilarious. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is Consumer Reports basically put all of the different brands to the test. They had Starbucks, which everybody likes to beat Starbucks. They had Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Millstone, Folgers, let me see what else they had. They had Chock Full of Nuts, they had Caribou, Kickapoo, Bucks County Coffee Company, and Pete's from Berkeley, California. They also had, those are all the ones that I can pull right off the top. They said, the idea was that they focused on the 100% Colombian from each one, and that the winner of all of these was 8 o'clock coffee. I like 8 o'clock coffee. I happen to like Chock Full of Nuts a little bit more. They said that the Chock Full of Nuts, their variable quality put both behind the 8 o'clock coffee. Chock Full of Nuts and Maxwell House. I personally think Maxwell House tastes horrible. I'm really a fan of Chock Full of Nuts comparatively. That all being said, any coffee that you brew at home in a grinder that comes in full bean is better than any of the already ground ones. So if Chock Full of Nuts ever released a full bean variety, I would love them to death. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is, in case you want to drink coffee incognito, you too can hide your shame no matter where you are and drink with the Stash Mug. I'm not really even sure if it's called the Stash Mug, but it's called There's a whole series of different mustaches that are drawn on coffee mugs that look really funny, that when you drink the coffee, it makes it look like you have a Fu Manchu, the crazy little Charlie Chaplin, the tiny little pencil thin, the all of the different ones up there. So they have Mustafa and then the Chaplin, the Maurice Poirot, the Poirot. So they have the Fu Manchu and the Magnum P.I. So it's a whole bunch of different ones up there. I don't know if you can actually buy these, but they're really kind of funny. Oh, wait. Yeah, there you are. $18.95. I'm sorry. I can draw a mustache on a white mug for that. But yeah, it's kind of funny, so I thought I'd pass it along. Next little thing we have up here is a Brunton Flippin' Drip coffee maker. I like this. It looks really cool. I like any kind of self-contained coffee brewer. This thing's $45, which is a little bit out of my price range. Yeah, I know. I already have tons of coffee makers around the house, and there shouldn't be a reason that I have to go back and get another one. But I'm always on the lookout for interesting coffee brewers. I still have the Ronco coffee one upstairs, which I use during the summer now, and I have all kinds of different ones. I actually just brought a Greek Abriki, so I'm going to be able to make Greek coffee in the proper fashion soon. I love playing around with this kind of stuff. I'm going to have to start building a wing downstairs in the lair to house all of my coffee stuff, because the wife's starting to get a little irritated that I'm taking over more and more of the counter space. But I digress. $45 for this. It looks a little bit like a French press in just like the compact design, but apparently it's a drip coffee brewer that all you do is you put the coffee in the middle and you put the water in one, and then the coffee comes out the bottom. So it's kind of like a variation on a vacuum brewer without the vacuum. It's just a standard gravity drip brewer. So it's pretty cool. I like this. $45, a little bit on the high end though, like I said. So there you go, and here we are. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is a telegraph.co.uk. Okay, breakfast at Tiffany's. Oh, I get it, because it's expensive, like jewelry. So what they did was they created a breakfast that cost £22,000, roughly $35,000. Yeah, they did the standard thing. They encrusted a croissant in edible gold and diamonds. I don't understand if there are edible diamonds. I'm pretty sure that edible diamonds are eventually going to come out the edible back end. But they had a bar de la duc with hand-seeded red currant jam with a cup of Kopi Luwak coffee, washed down with Chambord and champagne cocktail worth more than £20,000. Yeah, and everything was served out of a decanter of that was worth $2.4 million, the Chambord. So I like the idea here. I mean, I think it's kind of funny, but it's definitely a crutch that they're using the Kopi Luwak. Yes, Kopi Luwak is the most expensive coffee in the world. Most people know that. The funny thing is that people vary rather differently on what a cup of the stuff costs. So some people say it'll cost you $50 for a cup of it, for a sample the size to make a pot of coffee. Other people says it costs $150 an ounce. I've heard crazy things from all over the map. Eventually, I'm probably going to try it, no matter how disgusting the process that actually gets you to the end is. The funny thing is, it's like that seems to be everybody's go-to for opulent coffee. There's plenty of other ways that you could actually make coffee opulent. I'm just not entirely sure that these people really grasp. So breakfast at Tiffany's, get at Tiffany Jewelers, so there's that if you're interested. Next little thing we have up here is a story from Mass from over at Coffee Hero. Thank you so much, Michael. Soylent Green Energy powers Taiwan funeral coffee brewers. If you are unfamiliar with the movie Soylent Green, you need to Google it. But I don't want to ruin it in case you do, but Soylent Green is people is the tagline for the movie. The idea behind this is that funeral homes in Taipei are actually using the heat saved from cremations to operate air conditioners and to brew coffee for the mourners. So let me get this. All right, the mic is on. They're using the heat from burning the bodies in the process of cremation to brew the coffee for the people who are waiting for the bodies. I don't know how to properly phrase that any other way. It's kind of freaky when you really think about it. It's they're saying it saves them about $450 in electricity bills each month. How much coffee are they brewing? And do you mind having a little grandpa city blend? I'm just asking. It's kind of a little bit weird. So, yeah, they do roughly 50 cremations a day. I don't know how much coffee they drink, but I'm pretty sure there might be some other things they could do. Probably, you know, like have a couple apartments on the top floor and have the heat from the cremations actually heat them as well in the winter. I mean, who knows? The possibilities are endless now that we're using bodies for fuel. Come on, Coppertop. All right. Next up to something a little bit more fun. We are still posting the What Type of Coffee Geek Are You? We only've had one response and one email so far. I'm just curious. Do you need the good stuff? Do you enjoy things? What do you drink coffee for? Do you drink it for fuel? Do you drink it for flavor? I personally can drink coffee in a wide variety of different different quality levels. I like chock full of nuts. I like drinking the crap coffee in work. There's no other way to say it. I drink junk coffee in work because the water's bad, everything's bad, and I don't feel like going through 15 different ways to get it. I don't mind that. I just don't want my coffee to be burnt. That's pretty much the prime directive there. At home, I enjoy good coffee. I enjoy coffee that has a flavorful taste to it because I can take the time to enjoy it. That's how I roll. Just curious how you do it. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. I'm apparently a mutant, but us mutants still have a spot of trouble now and then. So, the mutant thing is in reference to the fact that genetic mutations may be why some people need less sleep than others. So, if my mother is listening to this podcast, which is a distinct possibility because she is a loyal listener, and thank you so much, Mom, I now have an excuse for why I've always slept less than everybody else, and it's not because I'll get sick when I don't sleep sleep as long as everybody else. I don't need an 8 hours of sleep. They're saying, on average, people who have this mutation in one of their specific genes need 2 hours less than standard people to feel refreshed. I personally get a headache when I sleep longer than 8 hours. I like around 5 hours of sleep. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you were looking for this episode, you can find it lovingly nested along with all of its other friends at caffeination.com. That's www.caffeination.com. If you are looking to send comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, please feel free to drop us a line at Caffeination on Twitter or pretty much anywhere else. The phone number is 215-240-1319. And you can email me, as always, at caffeination@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people. We'll be right back.